Welcome to Office Hours. This is podcast number 10 of the Rocket Jump Film School. We're here talking October. We're not talking about October. It is October, so we're going to talk about horror movies. And who better to honor than Wes Craven? Joining us is Brian Collins of Horror Movie A Day, and he's going to impart some of his knowledge and experience that he's had with Wes, and we're going to talk about this man's incredible impact on the genre of horror. Let's get started.
Rocket Jump Film School, scene one, Apple.
Hello, here we are. It's number 10 of Office Hours at Rocket Jump Film School. So this week is a very special week. It's a tribute to Wes Craven. And joining us is the very illustrious Brian Collins from Horror Movie A Day. And we're very happy to have you. So
thank you.
Hey, Brian.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Brian.
Tell us a little bit about Horror Movie A Day. And
Horror Movie A Day is now a book. I'm going to plug that whenever I can. It's not out yet, but I just finished it, and it's being edited by people that are much better at grammar than I am. So hopefully it'll be out before the end of the year. But basically it was a website that I did for over 6 years where literally I just watched a horror movie every day and wrote a review. I did that from 2007 to 2013, and then you know, like, real life was starting to encroach more and more, and I was just like, I can't do this every day anymore. Like, I'm not getting anything else done. I'm not seeing other movies.
Mm-hmm. yeah. So it's pretty incredible, though. Like, 5 years.
Yeah, I missed one day out of 6-plus years. Yeah. So it's like, all right.
That's amazing.
That was early in the run, right?
Yeah, it was like the second week, yeah. you know, I gave like a year's notice. My guys, like, I'm gonna get to 2,500 and then I'm stopping. Like,
right.
Wow.
And then that day was just so glorious. But I keep the site going. I try to update it, you know, like 3 or 4 times a month. But you know, because I've been working on the book,
right? Yeah.
Sometimes I miss that mark.
Did you ever fall into any patterns where you like, I'm gonna watch every zombie movie this month or anything like that?
Every now and then I do like a theme. Like, I went 1 week I did do Night of the Living Dead every day of the week because there was a different version. There's the original, there's the remake, there's the animated one, there's that piece of shit 30th anniversary version, right, where they kind of like recut it and added new scenes.
Then they had the color version.
Yeah,
and
so
it's
like
that.
I'm like, I have enough Night of the Living Dead stuff for a whole week. I'm like, that might be fun. I'll do that.
Yeah,
but usually I just kind of let it go. You know, random as possible, because I don't like to know too much about a movie before I see it.
Sure.
I want to go in as blind as possible.
Yeah, that's like Mike.
And
I think it's like when I picture that, I also think of that scene in I Am Legend when he's just going through the bookstore.
Oh, yeah.
Not the bookstore, the video store, and he's just like, literally going next film
he's like
on the
up
shelf.
To G or whatever.
Yeah. I thought that was a very interesting thing because, today's this, no matter what it was.
Yeah. No, it was more, I mean, once Netflix Instant really took off, like probably I think 2 years into me doing it, it started getting not more planned, but like I knew what I always had. Like, there were some days early where it was like 11 o'clock and I was like, I don't have anything yet, like, and like run to the video store because there was nothing at home that I wanted to watch. But once Netflix Instant came along, it became a little easier because it was like I had all this stuff at my disposal. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of it in the early days was sort of like independent weirdo stuff because they're just trying to fill it with content before all like the studios really had embraced it like they do now. So you don't see a lot of that stuff anymore. Like, they kind of weeded all that stuff out. Now it's just like, you know, the mainstream movies. But
for sure.
Yeah.
I kind of miss that video store experience, though, you know?
Yeah.
In the book, I special thank Blockbuster first. Cause like, seriously, because they had a thing. They had their own mail-in service, too, like Netflix, disc in the envelope thing. And you could trade them in at the store instead of mail-in, which is awesome because they bring it to the store and trade it for a movie.
Right.
And so that was, like, half of what I was watching.
Wow.
I was like, at one point, there was literally two horror movies left in the store I hadn't already watched.
Yeah. Oh.
Wow.
And neither of them I wanted to. One was a sequel to a movie I hadn't seen, and the other was like some asylum thing.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, I've cleaned you guys out.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, we're cleaning out. We're going out of business.
So
this is a special week. This is we're going to focus on Wes Craven films in particular. And I have to admit, I had not seen Last House on the Left until last night because knew.
Oh my gosh,
because
you watched that last night.
I'm sorry, I had to. I was like, how could you come into a Wes Craven, focused podcast without? And it's not because I didn't want to. It is because I didn't want to. I heard about how terrible this, like, the rape and torture scenes were.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, I was shockingly surprised at the artistry still within that film, and it definitely, it just was not what I was expecting. Because yes, those were awful scenes and awful things, but it was the way it was done that I was not expecting.
Yeah.
It was how it was made. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
well, when he started, he didn't exactly have the aspirations of being a horror filmmaker.
Yeah.
And I think he kind of went into that movie with a very different sense of what he wanted it to be, how he wanted to make it. I honestly think, everybody talks about the Bergman comparisons to Verdant Spring, but it's like, I think coming into it is he was interested in making a drama that had horrific overlap, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The remake was more like traditional horror, like more what you'd expect from like the horror movie version of that, that concept.
It was definitely the more mainstream.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's not, I mean, because like what you said, I mean, that's not one you watch. It was like when Wes died, it wasn't like, oh man, yeah, like everybody's like going to grab Scream. No one was like, I got to put on Last House, man. Like, no, that's not going to make you feel better.
Right.
Yeah.
No, there's certain movies that you hear about that you're like, I'm not going to, I don't really need to go
see
there.
It just to get that done. Like you check it off.
Yeah.
And then,
right.
You know, put your Nightmare on Elm Street DVD back in.
Yeah.
The acting in it was really surprising. Like, it did feel almost like a documentary in a way. It was like so raw.
I want to give you something.
I don't want that.
It's worth a lot.
I don't want
it. I want to be your friend.
No, you want to get free.
I want to be your friend.
So I was just really impressed with Last House on the Left. Do you think I don't know. I see a movie like that now after having seen like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and other movies from the 70s and how Wes has particularly like changed the genre every decade.
Yeah.
And so his influence is like has a huge reach and stuff. Do you see that? I mean, you've seen so many horror movies. Do you think that any particular Wes Craven thing I'm losing my question.
It's like the markers of what changed cinema, I guess. Right.
Yeah, well, definitely he mixed up horror twice because the first was, I mean, I wasn't around in the 70s. I don't know how much changed from Last House on the Left. But I know Nightmare on Elm Street was like the final nail in the coffin for a while for the traditional slasher, like the guy in a mask, usually like a whodunit type thing. After that, that's when we really started seeing more of like the more imaginative, more supernatural driven stuff, more effects driven. And then again in Scream, he brought that slasher that he originally killed sort of back because after Scream, it wasn't as big as it was in the early 80s, but we had like yet another like sort of revival. Like they brought back Halloween, they brought back Chucky, they had like Urban Legend, I Know What You Did Last Summer and these things. So it was just kind of funny that like he killed it and then he's the guy to bring it back. It is interesting. I mean, no one else has had that sort of longevity as far as like making that big of an impact within the genre.
Absolutely.
I remember before Scream, it was a lot of it had been relegated to like kind of VHS titles, like home releases.
Well, early
and 90s stuff like
is
that,
just
right?
really bad for horror.
Really bad.
It's just like, I've said before, it was like Fangoria was putting things like Congo and Judge Dredd on the cover, like sci-fi stuff, because they didn't have anything to cover.
Right.
You know, or direct-to-video movies.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
Like The Dentist 2.
The only thing that I can remember like seeing it was like Candyman. And
two or three like really good ones a year, but they wouldn't stick and they wouldn't.
Yeah.
They wouldn't like inspire the wave of copycats like they usually do. I don't know what it was, but it was just like you'd have Candyman or you'd have Silence of the Lambs even.
They all felt like
and
USA
like,
movies
right,
in a kind of way. Like,
that's good. And then everybody just went back to doing comedies and dramas and stuff. There was no wave of horror in that until Scream.
I still remember the impact of Scream and I was pretty young during that time.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm pretty much remember my parents not letting me watch it, but they still brought it into the house and just jacked the volume up. And so, as a little kid, you're just like, what is happening in the living room?
Yeah.
And then just the opening scene is just, I mean, everyone talks about that opening scene, but it is, I can't handle stabbing stuff.
I've had nightmares of just when, because I saw all these when I was a little kid. Yeah. First of all, I thought Matthew Willard was great comic relief. You know? I was like, as a kid, yeah. I was like, that guy's funny. Yeah. But no, I've had like this weird Royal Rumble of like everyone chasing after me in my nightmares when I was a kid. I had like Michael Myers, but it was all in like a Nightmare on Elm Street, like, you know, junkyard.
Yeah.
It was Michael Myers on one aisle, and then Freddy Krueger, and then Jason, and then Chucky, and then Ghostface, and I was like,
this is the worst. Like, deeper in the junkyard, that's when you start finding like the lesser guys. Yeah.
Like, I could take Chucky,
like,
maybe.
Like Children of the Corn Dude. Or, like, the Corn Dude. Yeah. Stepfather. Like, come on.
Yeah. But I feel like that sort of like he tapped into like that psyche there. For sure. And
certainly it's a nightmare.
Scream particularly had such a weird meta thing that I didn't even know what that was at the time, you know, where it was so self-aware.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a horror movie. For instance, number one, you can never have sex.
Yeah, I've always wondered, like, how, because, I mean, it came out in 96. I was always wondering, like, the kid, you know, I was old enough to see R-rated movies at that point, or just about 16. So is it 16 or 17? But I'm wondering, like, the 11 and 12-year-olds that kind of snuck in, the way I would go to, you know, to see, well, like, Freddy's Dead, I think, was one of the first ones I saw in theaters. Mm-hmm. Did they pick up on all, like, the jokes? Like, did they have any appreciation for the slasher genre that had died before they were born?
I was kind of in that sweet spot, because I think I was 13, 14. I can't remember exactly what. But It was one of those things where everybody, I felt like, had really just gone through their, like, that middle schooler watching horror movies and like that kind of thing, and really getting into it. So for everybody exactly at my age, it was like that perfect, like, oh, this thing gets it, like, kind of thing. Like, because it was just a bunch of middle school kids who had really gotten into horror. And so it was, it felt like a movie of the moment.
Yeah.
And it felt less like parody or reinvention and more just was the thing.
Yeah, I hate when people call it a spoof. I'm like, it's not a spoof at all. Like, it's
scary movie.
It's a little meta. It's
scary movie.
It's admirable of those movies. It's not mocking them. It's embracing those cliches and twisting them just enough that, you know, I feel smarter, but at the same time, they're not trying to, they're not saying they're above it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. In fact, I wouldn't even use the word meta. Meta makes it sound like a Dan Harmon thing. It's more referential.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. And I was thinking about this the other day. I want to ask you guys. It's so strange because Wes Craven obviously had such an impact with Scream that spoofs do come out like Scary Movie. And then Scary Movie just becomes out of control. You know,
there are more scary movies than Screams. Yeah.
And I was thinking about this because, like, Scary Movie is a great film, I think. I think it really is. I think Scary Movie is a good movie.
Mike, how you doing?
but hang on.
I think you were the right time for that.
Here's the question, though, is like, because Young Frankenstein is a great film. Yeah. You know, and I feel like, can you imagine what the world would be like if Young Frankenstein had like eight other Young Frankensteins? And it's like, you wear out the joke, and it's like,
let's just make
this clear, though. Yeah. Joey just compared Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, I was just like, what is happening?
It's Mel Brooks and Marlon Wayans. That's the kings of comedy.
There's nothing else to really compare it to. It's like, that was like, Mel Brooks isn't gonna make that type of movie, or he already did. So I feel like it was our generation's like closest thing.
I mean,
it's not the same, but comparably.
And it wasn't Scary Movie the original title for Scream. Funny.
Yeah,
well, which is why I think because Courtney Cox at the very end of the movie like emphasizes the word Scary Movie in a very awkward way, and I'm like, that always seemed like leftover.
Like title slam.
Like it's like some Scary Movie. They changed his title.
Did you ever hear the thing that Steven Soderbergh's friend would do? This is a little bit of a tangent, but he would always go see movies with his friend, and every single time somebody said the title of the movie, his friend would go, "There it is." And so, like, Soderbergh instinctively never wanted to put, like, the title of his movies, have somebody say it, like, actually. In the
thing. I love looking out for that whenever I hear it. Yeah. That's really cool.
So he just never wanted his friend to say that about, like, his movie.
One of my favorites was Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy shit. Because yeah, anyway.
Yeah. It's on the money.
Something that I noticed that I was not expecting also with Last House on the Left was this like insane side story with the cops.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it was like watching the Benny the Hill show.
Truck, yeah. Yeah.
They come in like, ring, 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 ring. And I was like, what the fuck is
yeah,
this?
Yeah, it's like...
How long does it take to get to the column?
About 25 minutes.
Make it 15.
He had the ideas like people need the, you know, tension breaker. It was like, yeah, you went way far. And like, like where you get like to the point where it's like, hey, you know what you're doing, dude? Like, that's such a, that's part of what makes that movie. You know, there's the rape and there's the two cops that make that movie like really difficult to watch.
Yeah. But then I see like, I see that sort of thing sort of cross over with David Arquette in Scream, you know, you get, or especially in Scary Movie where they're just literally inept. Yeah, they cannot like doofy officer.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you said it because it's like when I think when I was talking to Brian once about Dude Bro,
right?
He talked about Last House. Oh. Unless I'm great, but that happened. And just like it's funny when I just think about that parallel, all of a sudden it like hits me.
Yeah. Yeah. It just cuts to like these guys who don't fit.
Yeah.
At all. Okay, so what else? What else has he done?
I heard Shocker was one of your favorites.
Shocker,
right?
I'm a big defender of Shocker. I know it's funny because that was a movie that, you know, I started when I was like, excuse me, like 10 or 11. Hmm. And it was like the first time I'd heard like metal music, you know. Like,
oh my gosh.
Really big on the soundtrack. It was gorier. You know, it has more blood in it than a lot of the other movies. You know, the MPAA kind of left that one alone compared to a lot of the other movies of that era.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're 11 and you're seeing that much blood being splashed around, you're like, yeah, wow,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's just that nostalgia thing. But I hosted a screening of it with Wes at the New Beverly for the 20th anniversary. And it wasn't until that screening I realized how fucking slow that movie is. It takes forever. Because you ask anybody, like, what's Shocker about? And they're going to say, oh, it's this killer that goes in and out of the TV. That's the last 20, 25 minutes of the movie, maybe? Like, it's 45 minutes until they even get him, like, into the chair, you know.
The movie has like a bunch of
somebody said the movie is like
right?
five acts. Like it's just like when do you get to the part that's awesome? And it's bad. Like you don't notice that stuff at home for whatever reason, but when you're in the theater, especially if you're hosting,
oh,
you're telling
feel
people,
the energy.
You could just tell. Yeah, you just, and it was late. It was a midnight screening. When we do midnight screenings at the New Beverly, we do the Q&A beforehand. That way, the guests can leave if they don't want to watch their own movie and they can talk about it at 3 a.m. You know, the Q&A ran a little long, so we had Wes, we had a few of the actors there. So it was probably like close to one by the time it started. And then you're just like dealing with this like endless setup to the setup, you know? I was just like, get him to the chair. Seriously, it's like the end of the second reel when he goes to the chair. And then it's another reel before like, you know, the TV stuff goes in. And that stuff's great. Everybody's having a great time. But, like, at midnight, at 1 a.m., that's just... And I was like, man, now I get why people look at me like I'm fucking insane when I say I like this movie.
Well, no, I mean, like,
I mean, it's still fun as hell. I'll defend it to my dying day. But, like, I mean, that was the one I grabbed,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
when I heard Wes died. But I was just like, oof.
Yeah. In a theater, you can definitely feel
it. Yeah, there's just something about being in a theater that just magnifies every single problem. Yeah.
Well, if you're hosting, then you know you are the expectation of the audience.
Yeah.
Is also resting.
Yeah, because there are people that haven't seen it.
Yeah.
You know, that all they know is that this guy that they might trust because of his freaking stupid website. You know, like, well, this guy knows who he's talking about.
Yeah.
I'll go to midnight. Yeah. I'm gonna drink a cup of coffee and go see this movie, and it's just like, nothing's happening. Like, what is this guy talking about? You know, so that I learned really quickly. And like, all right, not every movie's a midnight movie.
Yeah.
Check, and also revisit them.
Yeah,
keeping that in mind before. And so the screening series improved from there. As far as the selections anyway.
Are there any other Wes Craven films that you think are underrated or anything like that?
Well, I mean, again, I know it's not a perfect movie. It's not a great movie. It's a fascinating movie, my soul to take.
Absolutely.
It is just so crazy. Like, it's just something really off about that movie.
Right.
Oh, and
I remember yeah, like when it came out, some of the reviews were like, it's sad to see Wes Craven making such a generic slasher. I'm like, there is nothing generic about that movie. What did you watch? Yeah. I want to see the generic version of this movie because it's just so fucking insane.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, there's a scene where the hero of the movie dresses up as a California condor and gives a report to his class and then pukes on like one of the other students.
Yeah.
If anyone even so much as touches one of its feathers, just one,
what are you gonna do? You gonna bite me, asshole?
And then there's another scene where the two characters are mimicking each other for no reason that I can understand.
No fucking way.
Wait, and enough with the fucks now. You say fuck, you're not me, okay? Stop it. Bug? Bug? Cut it out. Bug? 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 What just happened?
And then 75 minutes into the movie, you find out the two of the main characters are brother and sister. Like, and it's not a reveal. It's not like Luke and Leia. It's just like they just go home and like you realize that they, like, oh, they wait, what? They live, that's his sister? Huh. Okay. And the whole third act is just one house. A long conversation, and at one point the
it's
killer.
It's better if you know all this.
Yeah,
I have
the killer,
no idea what's happening.
The killer and the hero have a discussion that explains all the plot holes.
Oh no!
Like, they're just like, he's like, "How did you get into the house?" He's like, "Well, you were upstairs giving him a glass of water, so I came in through the window. While you went up the stairs." I'm like, what? Like they're helping each other
None
out.
Of this
it
helps
is so
anything.
Crazy.
Lots happened since you've been gone, Alex. Where did you disappear to?
I saw Patterson pulling up outside. I ran. I hid in the woods. Then I heard gunshots, so I came back. I was afraid he shot you or something. Where is he anyway?
Downstairs. He's dead.
What? What happened?
The Ripper happened. He killed Mom, too.
Hey. I can't believe this. You went to get me a glass of water, and now your Mom, Patterson, and Jerome are dead?
Yeah.
But it's, just,
it's not even exposition.
It's no, it's just so strange. It's and then it was in 3D in theaters, which just added to it because this is not a 3D movie at all.
No.
It's one of the, it was like one of those like, oh, let's convert it to like get a few extra dollars.
Post-Avatar.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. They just make everything 3D. Yeah. He's like, oh. I'm sure Wes was like, why not?
Yeah. But also it has Wes, who is probably like 68, 69 at the time, right? He wrote the script, and he's writing for teenagers, and I think like he had just watched Brick, you know,
like
a day before he started writing, and so he's like trying to approximate that slang, and it just, again, just adds to the strangeness of the movie.
Yeah,
just like, but it is such a singularly crazy, weird movie.
Yeah, and and a lot of people talk about like there's, I can't even call it an interesting gay subtext to the movie.
Yeah.
But it's like it sort of just goes there without realizing that it's going there pretty clearly and at the same
or
time.
Or puberty. I took it as puberty. Like there's this kid who's like his body's changing and he's not sure why.
You know,
it's causing these weird things. Yeah. But I mean, if you strip away all the weirdness, there's actually a really cool idea in it. And the funny thing is, like, I'm sure he probably watched it at one point, but it borrows an idea from Nightmare on Elm Street 4, which is one of the ones he had no involvement
in. That's not
Which is when one of the kids dies, the hero kind of absorbs their skill.
Yeah.
Mm. Just doesn't come across as well, because this is a movie that, like, kind of got rewritten and re-edited a bit by the studio. Which is, again, just adds more to the strangeness. I think at the end, I've never seen anything like this, has storyboards along with the credits.
Oh,
wow.
And some of them, I think, for scenes that aren't in the movie anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
That's good.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it is not generic. You might hate every frame of it, but I don't think generic would be the word you could ever use to describe that.
I was not bored watching this movie. I mean, I heard you talking about it, and then I watched it. I was like, what is this?
So it's the weirdness that is kind of delightful.
Well, I mean, and plus it came, I mean, it's basically his last movie because it came out, he's making them kind of at the same time as Scream 4. And that's like, you know, like that's just the Weinsteins calling the shots and Wes just kind of going for the ride. So, I mean, really, and, you know, he didn't write it. I mean, so that was really the last Wes Craven movie to me is is my soul to take. And yeah, I think, I mean, if you haven't seen it yet, you like I said, you're not gonna, it's not gonna be your favorite, but it is certainly way more interesting than anyone gives it credit for.
Do you think it'll age well and that people will come back to that?
I think so, especially now that he's passed and be like, oh, that's gonna be, you know, I mean, I'm sure they've seen Scream 4 if they wanted to, like that might be that last one, you know, like, oh, this is the last time we get to see a new Wes Craven movie. So I think, you know, people kind of catch on. They probably wrote it off, you know, because the trailer's terrible. I just watched the trailer again the other day. And it's just like this like bad new metal song over it and just shots of the killer running around. I'm like, all right, like I can see why nobody wanted to see this movie. Like, you know, Wes Craven's name gets our, you know, generation, but the younger kids don't, like all they know about him is like what he made Red Eye and a movie about Meryl Streep teaching violins, like, you know, like all that stuff is kind of before their time, because he kind of took the most of the OOs off. He did he did Red Eye and it was a big hit, and then he just sort of went away for a while, like four or 5 years and then before that he did what was it, The Werewolf Cursed. But that was another one that, like, Dimension had kind of mangled, and it was, like, reshot and delayed forever, so...
Because I remember there was a lot of hype early before anybody ever saw Frame.
Yeah, because it was supposed to be, like...
Try and do a werewolf movie.
Yeah, it's The Werewolf of Scream, because it was Kevin Williamson writing, had a lot of the... You know, had a few of the cast members, some of whom didn't end up in the movie because they got cut out.
I remember fondly The People Under the Stairs.
Yeah, that's a really, really great one.
Yeah.
That's one I think that'll really get its due.
Right.
You know, over the years. Yeah. I mean, it was a hit at the time and people respected it then, but it's really, it's held up. Like, you know, I put it, you know, Scream Factory just did a special edition and I rewatched it for the first time in a few years and I was like, yeah, this movie really works well.
It's cold!
Wes Craven's The People Under the Stairs.
And the humor works, which is not, as we talked about last house, not always a strong suit. But the humor actually works in that movie. I mean, some of it's a little much, but for the most part, it works.
Yeah, and it's funny, watching that as a kid, that movie scared the crap out of me.
Right.
And I was always afraid of my staircase after that, very specifically. But it's funny because that's how much, like, horror is just about getting at a very specific idea of where you can be afraid. Mm-hmm. Like, that thing you walk up and down every single day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you dream, when you do this, when you do that. But it's funny, again, revisiting it as an adult and being like, oh, this is funny, and oh, this is this. So it's just like...
And also, it's like, there's something that always struck me is just like so creepy in a weird way. There's the part where the two kids, the heroes, are up on the roof to get... I forget if they're trying to get out down the roof or if they're trying to just find a different way back in the house or what, but you could see downtown LA, you could see all the traffic behind them. Like, there's something so fascinating about this that they're trapped and it's not the usual horror movie house that's 300 miles away from anything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they're so
in the heart
close
of civilization.
To
everything
they would need to help. And it's like, you know, I mean,
just scream for help or something.
It always struck me as like really kind of cool.
What blew my mind with that specifically as a kid was the expectation got flipped because I was like, the people under stairs, that's the scary thing.
Yeah,
the real scary thing turned out to be the Jesus freak burning hill type of like
Twin Peaks, the two Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks, and then I recognize him again from Silver Bullet. You know, like that actor's great. He's running around with a gimp mask and shooting holes in the walls and stuff. And I was just fascinated by that movie. And then I was like, that really scares me a lot more because then I just saw Wicker Man again, the original, not the Nick Cage one. But that's so scary. Like, I feel like that type of psychological, like, brainwashing or, that belief, like, people believing something to make them do crazy is scarier than the actual people under the stairs or the monsters.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like we were talking about Child's Play recently, and it's almost, obviously, Chucky is terrifying.
Andy, no, please. We're friends to the end, remember? This is the end, friend.
But what's also terrifying is that as a kid, no one believes him. You know what I mean? And so that's like if you watch that movie as a child, that is almost the more terrifying part where this insane thing is happening and no one believes you.
He's that cry wolf.
Yeah, it's like, I guess, the you know, the psychological underlying or the motivation of the character is always like what makes great horror, I think. Yeah.
It all gets at the idea that the most terrifying idea is always being alone. And however that's reflected, whether you're alone in the woods and somebody's chasing you, or whether you're alone when nobody believes you, it's this idea that you're constantly pinned back against a thing, and there's nobody to reach out to. There's nothing to save you. There's nothing to do. It's like that's always the it's like one primal. Of the central tenets. Yeah. Of how
he's Any other final thoughts here on Wes Craven? We're gonna pretty much reach the end here.
Yeah.
Deadly Friend is not as bad as people say.
I never saw that.
Well, one more.
Hills Have Eyes 2 is. Skip that one.
Yeah. It's funny when you think about a person's career where it's... Because I think he had a very strong, not love-hate, but like kind of love, like, and like, kind of relationship.
Well, he never, with horror, you mean? He never, but I don't recall him ever being like, I want to get away from this.
You know?
Like, all the other guys were just like, always had that point where they're like, I don't want to do this stuff anymore. I'm trying to branch out.
Yeah.
And he was always just like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I have no problem with it. Like, he wasn't like, he didn't think he was above it.
Yeah.
He embraced it. I mean, you know, he did do that one Meryl Streep movie. Yeah. And Red Eye, I think, is more, you know, definitely more thriller. But you didn't see him, like, follow Red Eye with a bunch of, like, action thrillers, you know what I mean? Like, he went back to horror. Like, that's, you know, he was fine with it.
Did he impart any sort of thing when you met him, like, in terms of stuff that you took away from that night that really hit?
I do remember, this was before it came out, and I remember him having trouble describing My Soul to Take. So that was funny. I remember that he refers to New Nightmare as Wes Craven's New Nightmare. Like, that's the full title to him. I think maybe because he plays himself in the movie as a character. Like, maybe just he has that dissociation.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that was kind of charming. And then it broke my heart. It wasn't that night, but a couple years later, we did Scream at the New Reveille, and I had DM'd him on Twitter asking, you know, if he's gonna be in town, if he wanted to come do the same thing. And that's probably the last time I spoke to him was his reply was, no, I'll be out of town, but let me know about the next one. And like, I found that like a week after he died, and I was just like, man, heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I've met almost all those guys at this point, and he was always the most unguarded, I guess. Like, do you just chat like normal with, you know, like, because some of them just have that weird, like, oh, this is a guy from the press, I better stick to the book and, you know, do the But Wes is just like, you just chat with him. I remember I did the junket for the Last House remake, and I had like a one-on-one interview with him, and they kind of forgot about us. They forgot to come get us. So I ran out of questions, and I knew our time was over, and I was just like, all right, well, I'm not going to just like get up and leave. I'm going to just keep talking. It's Wes Craven.
Yeah.
And he was just so fun. We started talking about the Shocker remake that they were talking about at the time. Mm-hmm. And I had mentioned the soundtrack, and he just goes, Shocker! I'm like, like, that's so cool. Like, he's just such a fun, like, sweet guy.
Yeah.
And just, you know, he always like replied quickly if you asked him something and stuff. He's really approachable, and I like that. It's kind of funny because like he's a guy that's terrifying everybody since they're a kid. You just have, when you're 7 or 8, you know, you hear any of these guys, you're like, oh, they must be, you know, because the only thing you'll see like a rock star, you see like Ozzy Osbourne or somebody, like you figure that's what they all kind of look like, these horror guys, you know.
Right. And
he's just like, he's just like a grandfather.
Come up with these things.
Yeah, but he's just like this sweet grandfather type guy, you know, and super nice and very funny. They had a very great self-deprecating sense of humor.
That's good.
And he was great. I was very upset. I mean, it was weird to get texts from people when he died. People like texting me like as if he was like my dad. Like, I just heard, I'm sorry.
Like, definitely. It had an effect.
Yeah.
You know? Like when I heard the news, it was. It was like a grandfather or something. Like
I was playing with my kid at the time. Like, I was on solo babysitting duty. My wife is out somewhere. So I couldn't really, like, dwell. I was just to be like, oh shit, but it wasn't be like, all right, kid.
Yeah.
All right, 15-month-old baby. Give me a minute. You know, it was just like I had no choice but to like, all right, well, I'll have to deal with that later. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because, like, which worked because I was just like, I'm just going to focus really intently on him playing with these blocks.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think I pretty much, when I read it, I whatever I was doing, I just like got up and like went away somewhere. Yeah. You know, I was like,
you could feel like, you know, when you hear news like that, it's like a, you can hear a community, feel like a community just has like a sigh of or something. Yeah. I don't know. It's it's profound. It's,
and it's true. And it's weird that, you know, he was a bit older, but it still felt not. He was like
still,
time.
Yeah, he was still really active. I mean, he was. He has. Hasn't even actually come out. It probably comes out this month. He's doing a comic with Steve Niles.
Yeah.
He was still talking about People Under the Stairs. I guess this is going to do a sci-fi show, and he was going to like probably do the pilot and produce the series. Yeah. So it wasn't like he was like some guy that had retired. And,
right, you know what I mean?
Like when you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but like when. Gene Hackman, I guess, when he goes, it's not going to be, oh, God, no! Like, he had so much to give. Like, no, he's not. He's retired, you know. He's late in his, I think he's like 85 or something, you know. Like, he's had a good life, and that's it. You know, Wes still working. You get that pull, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, it's harder to deal with.
Yeah.
Well, on that note.
My soul to take.
My soul to take. Check it out if you haven't.
I'm going to watch that tonight.
Wes Craven's last quote-unquote movie, Scream 4, obviously.
Scream 4 is the post-credit stinger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Of the career.
Yeah, yeah.
My soul to take is the triumphant finale.
Yeah. So, Brian Collins, we can't thank you enough for coming.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Taking the time out and honoring Wes with us.
Yeah.
And loving hearing all your thoughts. So,
absolutely. Boom.
Have a good Halloween, everyone.